You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 323 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. As you can tell, I'm a little bit under the weather in terms of my voice, but hopefully this will hold up, and this is not my normal recording setup either, so you have to bear with me on this fine Monday evening into Tuesday morning for the latest podcast. So I took Monday off, obviously, with MLK Day. I was traveling over the weekend, so hopefully that was not a problem, and of course the Hawks were in action in the afternoon, which is another reason why I didn't do the podcast on Monday morning, was that it would have been sort of out of date, out of touch before the afternoon contest. So here we are to talk about what happened on Friday and on Monday. I will be honest and say that Friday will be less of a factor in this podcast just because of the fact that it was so long ago. But with that said, we're actually going to start the podcast with a look at what the Hawks did in terms of their second two-way contract, as Andrew White is going to be on the Atlanta Hawks for the foreseeable future. The Hawks, basically, there was a report from Sham Sarania. I guess it was over the weekend, and it's one of those things where he is almost always right. So it's one of those things where the Hawks didn't announce this right away. It wasn't a local break, but Shams is very, very good at breaking this kind of stuff, and he was all over it, and the Hawks actually formally announced it on Monday. So Andrew White is a 6'7", 210-pound swingman from Syracuse. He actually played at the college level a couple different spots. Was at Kansas, was at Nebraska, ended up at Syracuse, and he's been playing with the Maine Red Claws in the G League so far this season. He has played 24 games with them, averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds a game. Pretty interesting prospect in some ways. You know, a 40% three-point shooter at the G League level. It's a pretty small sample, obviously. It's only less than 200 attempts. With that said, you know, he was always a good shooter at the college level as well. I'm looking at the numbers now. It's one of those things where, you know, White, because he bounced around so much, people are sort of unfamiliar with him, at least in my experience and what I've seen so far. But he was a 39.5% three-point shooter across his college career. It's about 111 games. So he's an interesting player in a number of ways. Obviously, the Hawks had the second two-way contract available to them because of the promotion of Tyler Cavanaugh to the full roster. And they had to make a move by Monday in order to take advantage of that second two-way spot. And because they don't have a roster spot, the only way to add someone, you know, they cannot assign a player to a 10-day contract because they don't have a roster spot. So getting another guy in there on a two-way seemed to be a priority, and that was something that they were able to do. With that said, the 45-day cap that we always talk about with Cavanaugh and Majet, it's actually going to be slashed in half and be a 23-day cap for Andrew White. Of course, that cap also does not extend to when the G League season ends, which is before the NBA season ends. So the Hawks will be able to carry him after that, you know, sort of freewheeling. He's going to start at Erie. He's already in Erie now, but we'll keep an eye on that. I'll be surprised, honestly. I think it's more likely than not that he never becomes an NBA player. That's not a shot at him. It's just kind of the way this two-way process works. But still, he's a talented player and you know, former, you know, pretty impressive prospect, and was a good college player for sure. So we'll keep an eye on him. I kind of like his game, but we'll see how it translates and if he can even make it to Atlanta in the near future. With that said, we can get into briefly what happened on Friday as the Hawks fell to the Brooklyn Nets by a final score of 110-105 at home. Gonna spare the full breakdown on this one, but Dennis Schroeder was awesome. A career high 34 points and 7 assists for Dennis. He was 14-26 from the floor, 3-5 from three. With that said, he did make a couple of blunders down the stretch, missed his last two layups, and had a brutal sort of a last-second turnover that kind of sealed things in the loss. But, you know, tough to blame a loss on him considering how well he played before that. Dwayne Dedmon was a real bright spot off the bench. His best game since returning, 11 points and 9 rebounds, was plus 18. He was the only player on the entire roster, aside from Isaiah Taylor in a brief stint, that was a positive, and he was plus 18 in a 5-point loss. So Dedmon, all the good work that was taking place was with Dedmon on the court. Also, John Collins with a 5-point, 10-rebound game in 15 minutes. He's been playing a lot of power forward alongside Dedmon, and that lineup is working pretty darn well. And Tyler Dorsey hit 3 threes off the bench in 14 minutes as well. Defensively, the Hawks had a lot of trouble here. Brooklyn made a lot of, you know, they took a lot of threes, and the Hawks allowed a 111 offensive rating for the Nets. That's not going to get a lot of wins. And even with Brooklyn's poorest defense, the Hawks were not able to fully take advantage. It was only Kent Bazemore joined Schroeder and Dedmon in double figures with 16 points. He was pretty good in this game, 4 of 8 from the floor, 2 of 2 from 3, had 4 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 assists. But pretty lackluster performance from a lot of guys. Wasn't as if anybody was just terrible. You know, Torian Prince was pretty bad, obviously. 27 minutes, 1.04 from the floor. He pretty much disappeared in this game. Did play a lot, and we'll talk about sort of the way that he was not on the floor again on Monday, but it's been a little bit of a rough patch for Torian. I'm not sure if there's something going on there. We'll talk about that with the Spurs game, but he did not play well here. But everybody else was just sort of run-of-the-mill, I would say. Pretty average game for most guys, and this was not enough to get a home win. It's a pretty bad loss, I have to be honest with you on that. The Hawks were actually favored in that game. One of the rare times this season the Hawks have been favored in Vegas, and against a struggling Nets team that was not very healthy right now. It's easy to see why, but Spencer Dinwiddie was awesome for the Nets. 20 points, 10 assists, and 9 rebounds. He's been one of the best stories of the entire NBA this season, and that continued with that performance on Friday. And even Jahlil Okafor with 17 points on 8 shot attempts for the Nets was a bit of a surprise as well. So we can get into and sort of close with the game on Monday, of course, the MLK Day festivities. I personally am really happy to see that game came back to Atlanta. Last year, you might remember that the Hawks played in New York on MLK Day after a long stretch of playing home games. I'm a big fan of that afternoon, sort of 3 p.m. home game situation at Phillips Arena on that MLK Day. I think there should be a game in Atlanta and Memphis always on MLK Day, and that's we're back to that now. I think and hope that continues in the future, and obviously the result was a very, very good one for the Hawks. They came in as an underdog in this game. I will say, you know, Kawhi Leonard did not play for the Spurs. He was a late scratch, so that actually brought the betting line down to about 5.5 or 6. So it wasn't as if this was a shocking development necessarily for the Hawks. They were certainly not supposed to win this game even without Kawhi, but that's certainly something to sort of keep in the background as you think about and evaluate this particular contest. From a big picture perspective, it was a clutch run that kind of was surprising and pretty impressive in a lot of ways. Dennis Schroeder, basically, at one point, the Hawks looked like they were going to seal this thing after a ball caromed to Dedmon for a three-point play to go up by 5 later on, but LaMarcus Aldridge got a three-point play to sort of cut that deficit back to 2, but Dennis Schroeder hit a pull-up over Davis Bertans, stretched it back to 4. It was a lot of Dennis Schroeder down the stretch. Danny Green hit a 3 then, and what I like was that Bud fouled twice with a three-point lead in the final seconds of the game. The execution was not great, I will say, because the Hawks were just fouling too quickly. There was not enough time going off the clock. And then, weirdly, I'm not sure if Bud called it off or not. There's been some discussion about whether Bud called off the foul at the end of the game or not. It seemed like he was making some gestures on the sideline to say he was calling off the foul, and the Hawks did not foul on that last possession. Danny Green missed a 3 that would have tied the game, and the Hawks secured the rebound. That was the end of that. So a pretty high-level performance from the Hawks down the stretch, especially Dennis Schroeder. He made a couple of big-time plays back-to-back with the pull-up over Bertans, and then a big-time left-handed finish to go by 3 with 10.2 seconds left, I should say. That was really important in securing the victory. Offensively, a 108.5 offensive rating, 47% from the floor, 36% from 3, and only 24 assists. So it wasn't as if the Hawks played great offensively, but they played pretty well considering the fact that San Antonio's defense is exceptional. Even without Kawhi, they've been very, very good on defense this season, and that continued here. But the Hawks were able to take advantage at least a little bit. But more impressively, even I would argue, is the defense. The Hawks held San Antonio to a 105.3 offensive rating. That's not, you know, lights out, but again, a very good Spurs team. The Hawks played quality defense in this game, and that was a huge part in them actually holding on and winning it. We'll talk about the bench first here. John Collins, 12 points and 8 rebounds in 22 minutes. I'd like to see him play a little bit more, as we've been saying over and over again, but he did play more than Miles Plumlee in this game. Mike Muscala disappeared in a little bit. Only played 3 minutes, only one stretch in the first half. So it was all Collins and Dedmon off the bench as bigs, and I have no issue with that whatsoever. I think I think it's probably time, honestly, to go back to Dedmon, considering Dedmon played 26 minutes in this game. It's clear that he's able to play a larger workload now, so that should be sending Plumlee to the bench sooner rather than later, in my opinion. We'll see how quickly Bud is willing to do that. Collins played very, very well in his relatively limited time, was a +1 in 22 minutes, and I thought he was efficient and good and effective against the Spurs. Dedmon played well again, 12 points and 10 rebounds in 26 minutes, 4 of 8 from the floor, made that huge 3-point play down the stretch, played quality defense. Had some issues with LaMarcus Aldridge, as everybody does, because Aldridge is very, very good. He had 25 and 11 in this game. He's been awesome all season long, but Dedmon, I think it was Kale Schenard, talked about how Dedmon's the best center on the team. I would still agree with that in a big way. I hope he's playing 25-30 minutes a night moving forward, because they need him to be as successful as they possibly can be. Malcolm Delaney was actually playing down the stretch here, playing crunch time in place of Torian Prince. Played well, nothing spectacular, but 5 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists. Was a +4 in his 20 minutes. Did not shoot the ball well, was only 1 of 5, but I thought he was solid, and especially defensively. He was always in the right place at the right time, as sort of his trademark is that. Marco Bellinelli was considered to be questionable questionable for this game before the game, but Christopher Moore of the AJC reported that he was certainly going to play. He ended up doing that. Played 21 minutes, 4 of 6 from the floor, 2 of 2 from 3. When he shoots like that, he's very valuable, 10 points, and was a plus 6 because his offense was really playing up in this spot. And Tyler Dorsey had a very nice game. He had 14 minutes, 2 of 4 from the floor, and 5 points for Dorsey, but 3 rebounds and 3 assists, and he was sort of flying all over the place in the best possible way that the rookie would be. I continue to be a little bit surprised that he's playing as much as he is, but I have no problem with it at all. Please, you know, I'm all about Bud investing in the young guys, even though I'm not the hugest Dorsey fan necessarily when compared to some other people, but I do think he has the potential to be a good basketball player, so we'll see, and I'm all about Bud, especially now that the team is not in the playoff race, for instance. Please ride the young guys, and I'm all about that. Moving to the starting lineup in this game, Torian Prince, as mentioned before, had a really sort of disappearing act again. Was not on the floor down the stretch, but was playing small with Delaney and Bazemore on the wings. That was defensible. Even if you look past Torian not playing well, because San Antonio's not huge on the wing, and they were playing Danny Green as something of a small forward. Still, Torian did not play well at all here. 2 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists in 25 minutes. Was 1 of 5 again. So last two games, pretty much no shows for Torian. Something to keep an eye on there for sure. Had 4 fouls as well. Miles Plumlee had 6 rebounds. That was his one value to the game, I would argue. And just some beef. You know, he is big and physical and kept Pau Gasol off the glass a lot at times in this game. But 17 minutes, only attempted one shot and missed it. And there it is with Miles. Ursula Ilyasova had a very nice game here. 20 points, 5 rebounds, 9 of 15 from the floor, 2 of 4 from 3. And Ursula is a guy I continue to like quite a bit. You know, obviously the trade rumors are going to be there until he is traded or isn't when the deadline arrives. But Ilyasova is a very, very valuable player that does a lot of things well. And he played well here. Kent Bazemore, 4 of 12 from the floor, so not great there, but played well in the floor game, I'd argue. 10 points, 4 steals, 2 blocks, 4 assists, and 3 rebounds. Had a couple of questionable offensive plays down the stretch. Had a bad miss at the free throw line with a wide open jump shot with about 3-4 minutes to go. And I was very, very frustrated by some officiating in this game, but I thought Kent, on the whole, played pretty well in this spot. And finally, Dennis Schroeder, another nice game, 26 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, and 5 turnovers is not great, but 10 of 20 from the floor, and 5 of 6 from the free throw line, including the clutch play offensively. I was talking to a good friend of the program, James Hollis, after the game about sort of just how good Schroeder is. You know, you could definitely see the upside when he plays the way that he did in the closing minutes offensively. Defensively, it's not the greatest game for him in the world, but he did play. He has been playing better, continues to play better offensively. Defensively against opposing point guards, and that sort of was important in pinpointing him playing well in this game. And the Hawks needed every bit of his performance with 26 points. So on the whole, again, a very, very impressive win for the Hawks. The schedule does not get all that easy for the Hawks, even though they're at home. There are some favorable moments at home in this schedule. Coming up, it's the Pelicans on Wednesday. The Bulls on Saturday is going to be something of a showdown now because the Bulls are playing incredibly well randomly. I thought for sure the Bulls were going to be the worst team in the league this year. I was wrong about that. That'll be an interesting game at home. And then Utah and Toronto to round out a 6-game homestand before a 1-game jaunt to Charlotte and then 3 more at home. So this is, the teams that are playing against, Chicago and Utah, favorable matchups. Charlotte twice is not bad either. But the team, the home venue, it's probably more important than the teams because they're still playing some quality stuff. The Pelicans are 500 bunch in the West, and they're better than the Hawks for sure. Toronto, Washington, Minnesota, and this run as well. So we'll see how the Hawks play. But if nothing else, Monday's performance leaves a positive taste in your mouth as you look forward because the holiday win, a pretty good crowd at Phillips, and an electric atmosphere when compared to some other games this season, and a 102-99 victory over a team that is obviously better than you, even without Kawhi Leonard, is very, very nice to see. So that we're gonna leave it there for today's podcast. I do really appreciate everybody's patience with me as I was traveling, and of course my voice, as it has been, I'm sure you can hear, decimated in some ways, but we'll be back on a regular schedule beginning tomorrow. Plan to have a guest on, hopefully that comes through, and if nothing else, we'll have a podcast regardless before the game on Wednesday against the Pelicans, which I will be in attendance and podcasting from Phillips Arena. So there it is on that front. So please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done that already. I really appreciate that. Check out the entire Locked On Podcast Network. I really cannot recommend that highly enough. We're doing big things with the Locked On Network, so check that out as well. Subscribe, check us out on Peachtree Hoops, follow me on Twitter @BTRoland, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.